Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. From the right tonight, we have
DJ McGuire, a progressive conservative from Suffolk, Virginia.
And from the left side of the tracks, we have
Greg Matuzak, a common sense liberal and soon to be a cupcake maker from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Rebecca Kushmider, a progressive feminist who really likes cupcakes from Kensington, Maryland.
And I'm Kevin Kelton, a passionate cupcake. No, I'm a passionate moderate from Los Angeles, California, and I've been called a cupcake many times. So we want to thank everybody for coming and joining in tonight. As you know, our website is moreperfectunionpodcast.com, where you can find bios about your four hosts. And also, sometimes we post funny or interesting columns there. And Rebecca has an interesting series, Pop Goes the Political Culture. And Rebecca, you posted one just the other day, right?
I posted on Friday. I would like to think this is a college-level course on the First Amendment. I'm totally qualified to teach that, but talking about different types of speech that have occurred recently, anyone from Roseanne to Kim Kardashian to Donald Trump, and who is within the bounds of First Amendment rights and who is not. Spoiler, Kim Kardashian, all good. Donald Trump, bad.
Ooh. And we're going to get into all those fun people in a few minutes. But first, we have to talk about the most topical issue that's come out of the news today, which is the SCOTUS ruling about the baker in Colorado who apparently won his case. Who wants to take this one first?
Let me talk about this. I've been, you know, my first instinct when I saw this ruling come down, the background on the case is that a baker in Colorado denied a gay couple a cake. They wanted a custom wedding cake, and he said, no, I don't do custom wedding cakes. And so they filed a complaint with whatever entity in Colorado handles this stuff. And that entity came down on the baker and made him take sensitivity training and told him that he needed to be baking cakes for gay people and that his religion was stupid. And this has been winding through the courts for months and years and on and on. And what the court decided today was not that the baker was right to have denied the couple the cake, but the state was wrong to have forced him into sensitivity training and been dismissive of his religious convictions. So if the state could have handled it in a better, more appropriate, more neutral manner was the finding, it would have been fine. It doesn't, the ruling as it stands doesn't give license to discriminate, but it also doesn't give license to states to tell people that their religious convictions have no meaning.
So DJ, you had a really good point today on Open Fire when you were analyzing this, and you said, you know, whenever you see a 7-2 or 8-1 decision come out of this court, assume that it's not what you think it is, that it's not an ideological decision, and go on and explain that. It's a really good point.
Yeah, because essentially we have, from a quote-unquote partisan perspective, we have four justices who will normally almost always land on the quote-unquote left position. Kagan, Breyer, Ginsburg, and Sotomayor. We have four who would normally almost always come down on the rightest side of whatever an issue is. Chief Justice Roberts, Thomas, Alito, and Gorsuch. And then we have Justice Anthony Kennedy, who in the modern political world tends to go back and forth. When you see something that says 7-2, what that essentially means is that the things that would normally hold the left base together or the right base together broke down for some reason. And that usually means that there is an angle that most folks are not really looking at. And because initial press reports, you know, journalism is the first draft of history, which means it usually gets it wrong. And this was another example of that. The press rushed to put out the story, understandably, for there were no conspiracy reasons behind it. Just, we got to get there first. Slap it up in two sentences and call it a developing story. That's standard. But you can't really get to something this nuanced in two sentences. So when you see 7-2 or when you see 8-1 or even 6-3, there's something in there that there's a nuance in there that's new and that's different.
Well, and you know, and what I haven't read either of the opinions in toto yet, but from what I gather, there is a valid point to be made that states should not dismiss religious convictions out of hand.
Well, essentially, that case came down to who was the real victim. Was it the gay couple that wanted a cake, or was it the baker that had to bake one for them? And we can't touch on that topic without talking about the victim in chief, Donald Trump, who this week somehow, one woman lost a TV show, one woman almost lost a TV show, but the real victim in all of this was Donald Trump. How did that happen?
Because he's always the victim.
Yeah, he's always the victim. It's actually on his business cards. If you go to his LinkedIn profile, it says victim.
So obviously we're talking about the Roseanne Arnold or the Roseanne Barr situation, which happened the morning that we posted our last podcast. So an entire week has gone by and we haven't been able to touch on this subject, even though to some of our listeners, you've been hearing about it for a week now, and we apologize. But we're going to try to add to it, not be repetitive of what you've heard before. And of course, that same day, Samantha Bee got in trouble on Full Frontal for calling the daughter of the President of the United States a feckless cunt. And by the way,
he's quoting her, by the way, for all you listeners who are meant to get in the high
dungeon. I'm quoting Samantha Bee, and we decided before this show that we were not going to just say euphemistically the C word. We've said the word nigger on this show before. Yeah. It wasn't one of our highlights, but we felt if
no,
we're going to...
But DJ wrote the dissenting opinion on that episode.
I was out that week.
He was the Ruth Bader Ginsburg of the race discussion.
Yeah, but we did that, and so I couldn't in good conscience go, you know, walk around on this show saying the C word all day long.
Exactly. And again, Kevin has quoted the word. He is not actually using it. But there is just – I mean, first of all, just to get back to why Roseanne was actually fired, because I think this is something that got lost in the discussion. ABC didn't fire ABC directly fired Roseanne, but that's not, the reason ABC fired Roseanne is because of our entertainment decisions, because of our economic decisions. ABC fired Roseanne because Disney exceeded their their earnings expectations for the first quarter due to the Black Panther movie revenue, which means we got Roseanne fired. We made it abundantly clear to ABC that diversity is profitable and that racism is not profitable. This was the market at work. This was consumer power reflected in what ABC did. ABC followed the money, which meant they followed our decisions because we spent that money and Disney and ABC said, well, if we want them to spend that money again, we better get the hell rid of her. And that's what they did.
Oh my gosh. Wakanda forever. Wakanda forever. There we go.
And, you know, and I've heard that Roseanne's numbers dropped precipitously after the first few weeks of her show. And if advertisers were calling ABC and saying, we don't want to be part of this, if, as I think, Kevin, you postulated, Shonda Rhimes is saying, guys, you know, and Wanda Sykes running away from the whole thing saying, I'm not going to be part of this anymore. The game was stacked against Roseanne. She had her shot and she blew it.
But what about Samantha Bee? Is it the same thing?
It's not a question. I'm glad you brought that up. And what I wanted to say in this episode, because I wrote an article this week that was, I think, possibly the most controversial article we've ever put on the More Perfect Union podcast website. I wrote an article saying that the first day when Roseanne was fired, I actually thought it was the right call by ABC, and I was thrilled. I've never liked Roseanne. I was not a watcher of her show, and she is someone who seems to be a racist. So I initially thought, good for you, ABC, whether it was for the market causes, whether it was for morality causes, you made the right choice. Then the Samantha Bee story broke. And by the next day, as I had let all of it kind of simmer in my mind, I came to the conclusion that my initial reaction may have been wrong, and that, frankly, I don't think either of these people should have been fired. And I took a lot of heat, both on our website and on Facebook, in Open Fire and in other places, from people who lectured me violently about how it's a false equivalency and racism, you know, has no place, and ABC can fire whoever they like. And I heard every reason under the sun why one should have been fired and one shouldn't. But I want to expand my explanation. As everybody knows, because I talk about it almost every damn week, I come from the television business. I was a writer. That's where I spent my entire adult career. One of the things that I am very concerned about is employers who try to make political decisions in hiring and firing. The blacklist, as everyone knows, was one of the great blots on American history. And it came about because people who really thought they were doing the right thing fired or stopped hiring artists because of something that they did that had nothing to do with their work or with their performances or with their art. And I know that we're going to get people after this podcast who are going to be very upset at what I'm saying. And I'm cool with that. And I understand your outrage. I have no tolerance for racism any more than you do. But even if Roseanne is a racist, and I'm not sure that her racist comment proves her to be a racist, we have all in our lives made very questionable jokes that either were racist or bordered on racism. And please don't tell me you never have, because everyone's done it. Everyone has made a joke about the size of a black man's penis. Many people have made jokes about Kim Kardashian sleeping with black men. People have made references to running like a Kenyan. And we could go on and on. It's pervasive in our culture. I'm not saying it's good, but Roseanne is not the first person to have crossed the line. And I personally am very uncomfortable with employers becoming the morality police of our culture. So where I came down is, I didn't like it when Kathy Griffin lost her CNN New Year's Eve special job over her photo. I didn't like it when Martin Bashir was fired from MSNBC for just implying, not saying it out loud, but implying that someone should shit down Sarah Palin's mouth. He didn't say that. He quoted it from the slavery times, and then he said, what if someone were to do that to Sarah Palin? And they fired him for that. Charles Rocket, this is a blast from the past, a man who about 38 years ago said fuck at the end credits of Saturday Night Live, and it was apparently just an ad lib that he got carried away and he said it, he didn't mean to, and he lost his job for that. Bill Maher believes he lost the show Politically Incorrect on ABC because of comments he made after 9/11. I never agreed with any of those, and in that context, I don't agree with what happened to Roseanne.
Where I disagree with you, Kevin, is while it was the employers who made the direct decision as to whether or not this person was employed or not employed, they were attempting to read the zeitgeist and they were attempting to read their customer base.
That's what happened during the blacklist, DJ. They didn't hire these people because they thought viewers would not accept them in their homes. They wouldn't go to their movies, even if it was a writing credit. That's what the blacklist was.
Yeah, except while I think most Americans will be upset at what Joe McCarthy did and what the government did during that time, you're not going to find as much outrage about the Hollywood blacklist outside of California as you do inside California.
Oh, well, we should. We damn well should.
If you're talking about reaction to the popular will, then you're going to get strange things like this. And I'm not going to sit here and say that employers should essentially choose to stick the finger to their own customer base for the purpose of some artistic talent who goes off the handle and who says something offensive. Now, people have the right to say, I am offended and I'm going to do something about it. Whether or not it is a situation that makes sense to most people, you know, if somebody is a talented artist and a popular artist, and they say or do something stupid, and they get fired for it, and the American people or enough Americans say, you fired them for that? Really? Then they're going to get a second chance with another career.
All right, let me interrupt and try something different real quick. As an educator or a teacher, and I'm not relatively famous, and it's not as famous as I want to be. If I made racist comments on my Facebook page, and if it was seen, I would be fired.
And okay. That's my problem, Greg. I don't think you should. I agree you should.
If a police officer, and this happens all the time, if a police officer makes racist comments because he's got a job to do, he or she would be fired. A 9/11 operator, if they do. You know, there's a high standard to civil servants in America where we have to, you know, I have an ethics clause in my contract. It says, you know, I can't do certain things and my work will fire me. One of them is obviously.
And that, you know, and I, that's the rub. Right. You have the clause in your contract. It was laid out between you and your mm-hmm. employer. It was a term that you both understood before you took the yep. job. In cases like Roseanne, was that in her contract?
I will guarantee
it.
I'm
sure
it
was.
Something she understood to be true. And it, if it was something that she had agreed to in taking this job and then she knowingly violated, I don't feel that sorry for her.
Not at all. Seeing as I make somewhere between Jack and Squat. Wait, somewhere, since I make between Jack and Squat and I have an ethics clause and she makes slightly more than me and she has probably an ethics clause that lawyers have pored over. And she was like, it's Twitter and ambient time. And yeah, let's just violate this. Then no, my sympathy level is so low. It's so low.
So let me, I want to make something clear. I do not feel sorry for Roseanne. And I am not saying that ABC didn't have the right to fire her. Please don't try to project those onto my argument. ABC had every right to fire her, and she is a scoundrel of a human being. I do not like the woman, and I hate what she said. It's one of the most racist things anyone could say. That's not my point. My point is, when we start to get into a place where employers are looking at your private behavior, next is, you know, and this already happens, by the way. Oh, you still smoke? We have a rule at work, no smoking. And you smoke at home, well, we're firing you because that's not good for our health plan.
Oh my God, that was actually in one of my employment agreements, is that I wasn't allowed to smoke.
And you know, here's the other thing.
But I worked for the American Cancer Society, so that was kind of legit.
Yeah.
We are all on social media. And today, all my friends who yelled at me for 5 days last week, every one of you has the potential to write something that an employer or someone else will say, hey, you just stepped over the line. And all I can say is, if we're going to live in this culture where everything is a fireable offense, what goes around comes around. Okay.
Yep.
No, and I agree with you, Kevin, that there should be, for the bulk of us, there should definitely be separation between your private life and your employment life. And, you know, I lock down your feed. So, you know, you can't be Googled and your Facebook feed can't be found by your employer, for one thing. But yes, there should be room for people to be people as well as to be employees.
And to make mistakes. You know, people make mistakes. People get drunk and drive drunk.
Right. I mean, well, Roseanne's problem is it wasn't her first mistake.
No, it wasn't. And it was a horrible mistake.
I think the events of the past week have actually given us an idea of where this line is. And the line is usually defined by what is considered acceptable manners. Well, what is considered acceptable manners are currently in flux. And we're not sure where it's going to end up. But for now, one of the lines that is pretty clear is calling an African-American an ape is over the line.
Yep.
Calling the first daughter a cunt, forgive my use of the term, is not necessarily over the line. Because Samantha Bee has not been fired. Her show has not disappeared.
Well, you know what? There are two things that make it different. First of all, it was said on the show. It was vetted through channels. You know, the script was submitted to TBS. Hey, can we call Ivanka Trump a feckless cunt? And TBS said, yeah, sure, that sounds funny.
Right.
And TBS then copped to being equally responsible as the writers and the deliverers of the line. The other thing that makes this different and gives it a gravitas that the Roseanne situation did not have is that the White House was then calling for Samantha Bee to be fired, and suddenly you're in a First Amendment crisis. And if TBS had knuckled under and fired her, or canceled her show, or anything, suddenly the president would have been granted the power to silence his critics.
And TBS would have lost half the...
In a very immediate family, immediate way.
Yep.
But yeah, in addition to Trump making it a constitutional issue, there was the fact that as soon as it became Samantha Bee versus Donald Trump, TBS recognized that if they let Samantha Bee go, they would lose about half their viewership and become persona non grata.
They would lose half their viewership and we would all lose freedom of speech. That was a slippery slope moment, and TBS just... They apologized for using the word, and then they you know, went on with business as usual, which is the only thing they could have done. Because the moment the president says, yeah, you got to fire that lady. No, you've got to not fire her right then.
Right.
Because if the president has the right to demand the firing of citizens and private industry, we're fucked.
Yeah, no, that would have been a really bad outcome. And by the way, this is not the first time he's done that this week. Because today we learned that he disinvited the Philadelphia Eagles from coming to the White House because he didn't want a few of them to potentially not put their hand over their heart when the national anthem was played. Ugh.
Well, and now this is interesting. I've got Jake Tapper with a scoop from about, what time is it now? Okay, about an hour ago. And Jake Tapper on Twitter says, just spoke with a player on the Eagles who described some of the background scene. The team had had a couple of meetings to discuss the White House invitation, he said. Not many players wanted to attend the White House ceremony. Quote, the numbers were low. Tapper goes on to say, the Eagles player said the president making an issue of players who take a knee during the national anthem to protest racial injustice was never even mentioned in the meetings. He said there was no infighting on the team about attendance.
Good for them. Good for them.
This is Donald Trump. When the truth is too embarrassing, he comes up with a lie that threatens the democratic system. Instead of just saying,
so
you know
insane.
What, there are so many Eagles who don't want to show up. This is going to look awful. We're just going to shut this down. He throws in the whole anthem thing again. And once again, the president of the United States sounds like he's trying to tell NFL players what to do. This is bonkers. And frankly, you know, it's just one of those things where he throws nonsense at 50 miles an hour.
Take some Ambien, you'll be fine. Except for the racist remarks.
The More Perfect Union. Real debate without the hate. Available on iTunes and Stitcher.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So let's come back talking about trade wars, because we are all in favor of trade wars here. We want to make that clear.
No,
wait
a second.
I'm sorry.
Is there somebody that disagrees with that?
I have already filed trade war conscientious objector status.
It's true. He did. He filed
That's
it
right.
on Facebook.
This is ridiculous. I mean, I've ranted about this before, so I will try to keep it brief, because I know our listeners have heard me bitch about this before. What made it different this week was that Trump actually followed through on tariffs on steel and aluminum against Canada, against Europe, and against Mexico. Our closest allies and trading partners just got whacked with tariffs. And now there's talk that Trump wants to impose a tariff on German cars that are so high that no one can actually buy a Mercedes-Benz. This is the antics of an ignorant moron. He actually talks like our trade balances are profit and loss statements, like the country actually loses money if it has a trade deficit. He has no idea how international economics work. He has no idea how domestic economics work. He has no idea that he essentially imposed higher prices for just about anything that uses steel and aluminum. He doesn't realize that he has just led to businesses that use steel and aluminum having to fire workers because their costs are going to go higher. He doesn't know, or he doesn't care. And this is stuff that Trump actually believes in. This isn't stuff where he lies and lies to make himself feel better or to make himself look better. He actually believes in trade protectionism. He actually believes in mercantilism. This is what happens when Donald Trump is 100% honest with himself and the rest of the world. And it should fucking scare the hell out of all of us.
DJ, wait a second. DJ, are you saying that the United States is a feckless country? Oh, I've been holding on to that line all day. You can't boo that line.
God, that was so good,
well done,
Kevin.
Well done.
I, yeah, that was good. And we might be feckless. You might be right.
Well, I mean, I don't think that there's anybody here that's going to disagree with DJ.
No, you know. Not on that one.
Okay. Well, thank you for letting me rant.
Oh, please. That's the least of our concerns. The question is, where do we go from here? Is he just posturing, or is he going to continue with this trade war, which we are in? And, you know, how can it escalate, or how can it not escalate, I guess I should say?
Yeah, I think he's serious. I think he's going to keep pushing and keep pushing, and the rest of the world is going to respond with greater stuff on their own. He thinks that countries will knuckle under and come to the table to make deals, but they have their own electorates to think about. They have their own issues. They have their own problems for which now they can blame Donald Trump. Europe is falling apart at the seams. And now they don't have to focus on all that. They can just say, oh, it's all Donald Trump's fault for his tariffs. Mexico's election is July 1st. And this will pretty much ensure that the most anti-American candidate wins. You know, Canada is, you know, the Canadian prime minister always looks better at home when he bashes the United States, particularly if he's a liberal, which Justin Trudeau is. You know, Donald Trump doesn't understand the way politics works. He runs the government like a business, and he thinks everyone else runs the government like a business. What he doesn't recognize is that government is not a business. And that misunderstanding flows through this. It flows through his nonsense about executive power. It flows through his confusion over why the Justice Department doesn't say how high when he says jump. He thinks government should be run like a business. Government isn't a business.
And he's not good at running businesses. That's the other part of this.
Well, there is that too.
The guy sucks at running businesses. He's not successful. The only thing he can sell is his own ass.
See, I'm going to disagree with you, DJ. I don't think he tries to run the government like a business. I think he tries to run it like he's negotiating for a new car. I think he comes at every deal as, you know, hey, I'm going to lowball you, and if you don't like it, I'm going to walk away and find a different dealership. And the problem is that there's only one Germany. There's only one England. There's only one France. There's only one Canada. You can't walk away from the deal and go find another one to deal with. So that's why I think that he's a feckless leader.
Well, you're really getting your mileage out of that word feckless, aren't you?
Yeah, that feckless. It's a good word.
I still don't know what it means.
Yeah.
Hey, Siri, what's the definition of feckless?
Feckless means lacking initiative or strength of character, irresponsible.
Thank you, Siri.
What a cunt.
We're going to be in so much trouble after this episode. We're sorry, Sally. We'll get back on track.
So, okay, now there's so much has happened in the last week. The letter from the Trump attorneys that was sent to the Mueller investigators back in January that just became public just a few days ago. And what I find the most fascinating about this is it's not so much the content of the letter, although we can spend 2 hours just talking about that.
Sure.
It's that the Trump team immediately, well, not the Trump team, Trump himself immediately accused Mueller of leaking it when everybody in the world knows that this was leaked from the Trump side.
Do we know that for a fact?
Oh, please. Why would first of all, the Mueller team hasn't
leaked
anything. Who
cares?
The
Mueller's leaked nothing.
Secondly,
Mueller couldn't leak it.
They're trying to set up
Mueller's airtight.
They're trying to set up a public predicate for Trump avoiding the subpoena that he is going to get to testify. Trump is going to be subpoenaed, and a court is going to make him testify.
But this is the letter and the whole predication of I don't have to be subpoenaed because I'm the president, na 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 na, boo boo, ipso facto, is terrible. I mean, it's laughable.
They staked out such a preposterous position when they're claiming, and they're doing it as we speak, that Trump can pardon himself. It is so preposterous that they will get laughed out of court.
Yeah.
Well, and apparently somebody from The Hill, I think, or Politico, just walked around today finding Republican senators and saying, can the president pardon himself? And all of them were like, no, he really can't. And if he could, he shouldn't. And let's not talk about this.
Well,
it's an embarrassment.
A lot are refusing to answer it.
Normal person
Ted Cruz refused to answer it. Kevin McCarthy and the House refused to answer the question.
Well, of course they did.
A lot of them were so afraid of it.
Yeah, but Susan Collins and, you know, Susan Collins did Lindsey Graham, and Lindsey Graham was a JAG officer. He knows something about the law. Are, you know, saying no, he absolutely can't pardon himself. And if he couldn't pardon himself, we shouldn't even be going there. This is a stupid conversation. I can't believe anyone said it. Which I think is, you know, Senate-ese for shut up, Rudy, shut up, shut up, shut up. I hate
you. Well,
the
other thing we have to remember is that even if you accept, and I'm not saying I do, even if you accept the notion that the president can pardon himself, that doesn't stop Congress from impeaching him and removing him from office. Impeachment and removal is a political action. It's not a legal one. You don't need an indictment. You don't need a subpoena. You don't need any of that. I mean, Andrew Johnson was subpoenaed, and Andrew Johnson was impeached for violating the Tenure of Office Act. Most people would say the Tenure of Office Act was unconstitutional as hell. That didn't stop the impeachment from happening, and he was one vote shy of getting convicted.
The fact of the matter is, I didn't actually know what Andrew Johnson had been impeached for. I knew he was impeached, but not removed from office.
Yep.
But I didn't know why. Thank you, DJ. I've learned.
He thought he could fire Edwin Stanton, and the law said he couldn't. Silly law, but in any event.
Who was Edwin Stanton, though?
Edwin Stanton was Secretary of War at the time.
Oh, well,
then. He was also Lincoln's Secretary of War, wasn't he?
Yes. He held the job after Lincoln died, and then Andrew Johnson wanted to get rid of him, and Congress passed the Tenure in Office Act over his veto.
The Robert McNamara of the 1860s.
I guess, yeah.
Dear God.
Not that you have to include any of this, and that's offensive to Stanton. But
for the second time in this podcast, DJ has taken everything that I was just about to say. I'm just so pissed off that he literally. Yeah.
Everything that I was about to say was the name of my college band, Greg.
Right. Yeah, there we go.
Oh, right. I was just about to say Andrew Stanton. Oh,
I think this letter is very informative for a bunch of reasons. One, it gives an opening into Donald Trump's mind as to what he thinks he should really be able to do with the presidency, which frankly should scare the hell out of all of us. But two, it is also a reminder that when push comes to shove, we need to rely more on Congress than on the legislative branch than on the judicial branch to deal with an out-of-control Donald Trump. Because the Constitution makes it pretty clear, it's the legislative branch that is responsible for cleaning up the White House It is the responsibility of the legislative branch to rein in the executive branch when it acts in an unconstitutional manner or in a manner that attacks constitutional norms. And unfortunately, this legislature seems unable and unwilling to do that, with the possible exception of the Senate Intelligence Committee. That's really where our problem and where our weakness is. The weakness is that our legislature is too weak and deliberately weak. They've chosen to be weak.
Well, let's remember that Mueller hasn't returned any findings yet, and the legislature may be quite different in January 2019 than it is today. So, let's not give up on this yet.
Oh, but, you know, even if the legislature today should be, Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan should be willing to issue a press statement saying the president should not be calling for the firing of media figures. The president should not be saying that people who don't kneel for the American anthem should be kicked out of the country. The president should not be considering pardoning himself. It doesn't have to be an official action. It could just be censure on the same lines of what we're doing, but with more gravitas, because they're the freaking leaders of the GOP, but they're not doing it because Mitch McConnell just wants to appoint conservative judges and Paul Ryan just wants to cash a book contract when he resigns in the fall.
And the fact of the matter is, the reason why I focus so heavily on that, Kevin, was not to give people despair, but also to add in the reminder that who makes up the legislature is decided by the voters in 5 months' time, or in your case, beginning tomorrow.
That's right, because tomorrow is the California primary where we're nominating candidates to run for governor, a new senator, obviously many representatives to Congress, and a couple of ballot propositions. I'm very excited to go vote. I still do it the old-fashioned way. I walk to my local school. I walk inside. I say hi to the 70-year-old people who are working there. and I punch my votes back into the ballot like we used to do back in the 90s.
When I lived in California, I voted in a one-room schoolhouse.
Yeah.
The year I lived in California, I walked into a one-room schoolhouse. It was great. It felt like really getting in touch with my roots.
Yeah. Kevin, what congressional district do you live in?
I live in the 25th congressional 25th. District.
Okay, so you're in. So, do you have any take? I think there are three districts out there. Three districts that the Republicans. We thought the Republicans would be hanging on by their fingernails because they were Clinton-Kerry districts. But so many Democrats. Apparently, I think it's 38, 48, and 49, or maybe 39, 48, and 49, where so many Democrats have entered the race that because of the way California does it, the top two vote getters move on to November. There is a concern that all those Democrats will split the Democratic vote so thin that it'll be two Republicans running in what should be swing districts. I've seen national reports on that. Do you have a local take from LA on what the situation actually is in those three districts or anywhere else?
Well, I'm going to confess that I'm not as familiar with those districts as I should be. My district is also one that could swing, although the gentleman that's the incumbent House of Representatives member, Steve Knight, is a Republican, and he won last time by a healthy, it was like 55-45 or something like that. It wasn't a runaway. I think Hillary Clinton might have carried my district. So we could be in there too, or she did. She certainly didn't get crushed here. So
we could be in there too. Okay, because if Mrs. Clinton did carry your district, then I'm going to want weekly reports from your district because your district is going to be the one. It's the first in a quote unquote wave election, whether it's a wave or not. For put aside, districts that Hillary Clinton carried should be the first set of ones that are flipped. Here in Virginia last year in the House of Delegate elections, our lower house of legislature, Hillary Clinton carried 51 of those districts, and 15 of them have been represented by Republicans in 2015, and those 15 all flipped to Democrats in 2017. So I'm curious to see if something similar happens at the federal level next year, and if Hillary Clinton carried your district, you would be in the front lines of that.
Well, I can tell you this. What is happening on the Democratic side is there is a contentious race in my district. It got a little ugly, and I am concerned that, I think it will be Knight and one Democrat, but I am a little concerned about splitting the ticket. But what's more concerning to me is I'm seeing people in my district debating on Facebook and saying, well, if so-and-so gets the nomination, don't vote for him. And these are Democrats. And I'm in there going, no, guys, it's okay not to vote for him or her in the primary if you don't like the campaign they're running. But Democrats have to vote for Democrats in the fall, and they're arguing with me, just like what happened in 2015 and 2016. So I am very concerned about that.
Mm-hmm. I just want to break in to say the Caps have won.
Yeah.
Go Caps.
Go Caps.
Yay, go sports
ball. So what's
ball.
That, 3-0?
3-1.
3-1.
3-1.
They're one game away from winning the series. This is their first Stanley Cup, so let's... This is the first time they... Yeah.
I love basketball.
To shift back to the previous conversation, I'm looking at something from the California Target Book, which is headed by Rob Pyers. They have data on... They say that California 25 is a DCCC target, and Hillary Clinton carried it by more than 6.5 points. She got 50.1% of the vote in California 25. So, Kevin?
Boy, was that a lucky guess.
I'm just saying every week I expect from Kevin, and I say we put it in the podcast, the swing district report with Kevin Kelton, and he can talk about what's going on in his district.
Hold on. It's going to be called the Kevin Kelton Swinging California 25.
Swinging with Kevin.
You can throw whatever humorous title you like, but I'm dead serious. I want to report out of that district every week, and I think many of our listeners do.
When you consider the swings that we have had in Trump districts to Democrats, what was the one recently that it was like it had been plus 20 for Trump and it ended up being plus 4 for the Republican, and all the Democrats are like, Republicans, you're fucked in Arizona. So yeah, that kind of math matters.
It'll be interesting. I still have doubts that we're going to be able to unseat Steve Knight, but I will keep my fingers crossed and I will report to you on it. And with that, we want to thank everybody for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at hashtag NPU Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends will discover us as well. And as you've heard throughout this podcast, we spend the time between podcasts in a little Facebook group called Open Fire. And if you would like to debate with DJ, Greg, Rebecca, or just yell at me, please come in there. We would love to see you there, too. And with that, what does everybody have on tap for the rest of their week?
I'm going to start a podcast about death rays. I'm going to get ahead of the trend on this one.